Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, fresh back from NAB. And Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Good. And I just want to announce that it is official. I turned down the job of taking over from Dave on The Late Show. I said, Stephen should have a go. The guys are quite talented. Give Stephen a go. I don't want the job. So yes, I'll be staying with FX PhD.
Well, I think I know that you both missed being at NAB and also were happy to not travel. But let me just say, you avoided the FX PhD plague at NAB, which took the U.S. side members of FX PhD out of the mix each for 24 hours through some
illness.
Really bad 24-hour flu.
So, the thing is, really bad
to get at NAB.
It would have been really bad to get it and then fly home. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the idea of doing the live streaming event on camera, feeling that way, not a good thing. But anyway, good to be there. You were very much missed at NAB, but a lot of interesting developments there as well.
Yeah. I think there were quite a lot of interesting things, but not enough that I felt like I really wanted to be in NAB.
Exactly.
I stand by my decision because, you know, quite frankly, you guys were there and, you know, there is some stuff that's announced before at NAB, but you guys have to understand when you're listening, we knew about most of them before we got to NAB. So it wasn't as if... Now, the thing that I do agree about is like someone like Jason Wingrove on the RC found lots of cool, weird, obscure stuff that we wouldn't know about. And so, I love that Jason was there and we did an RC covering some of the amazingly weird and wonderful stuff that he found. So there is an advantage with being in Vegas, but for me that advantage is mitigated by the fact that it's quite a long flight and like a lot of time out of my week.
And from an FX PhD standpoint, you have a business partner who will be there as well, which is the other, I think, really critical thing about these trade shows, and that's the face-to-face meetings with people. You know, obviously, Mike and I have it down as far as running. Well, we hope we have it down as far as running an internet-based company from two separate cities. But there's nothing like that face-to-face meeting that we've talked about before. And I had a lot of really useful meetings with various people from, you know, the Foundry to Autodesk, to people like SpectraCal, who I did some training as part of the Reluctant Sysadmin course that's running this term at FX PhD. And we're going to have a discount, again, related to that. And they'd like to work more with us, provide kind of color management and color training as part of the FX PhD curriculum, and maybe even free for users. Other software manufacturers as well, very keen to talk with us, as well as being pitched by multiple artists on the show floor as to ideas they had for courses. So that's, for me, I agree. I mean, the announcement thing, yeah, we kind of knew about that, and you can cover it when not being there. But again, the bits and bobs, as well as the face-to-face meetings, those still remain, you know, quite critical at events. And that's why we attend things like FMX, NAB, and SIGGRAPH later this year.
Yes.
What was your perception of the show from afar?
Well, from a camera point of view, everyone was re-releasing the Red One, so that was funny.
I love that. Hey, and listen to the, I made a brief cameo, well, it's not really a cameo, is it? I made a brief appearance on the RC-141, but yeah, I love that line, Mike.
And boy, are some of those new lightweight cameras heavy. yeah, this lightweight, tiny little camera that's like two or three times the size of an Epic. But anyway, the price points are really good on those cameras. So,
in fairness, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect. As far as the software stuff goes, I do think that it's interesting what's going on with the Foundry and, of course, with Flame. We're going to have some more stuff coming up on what's going on with Flame, I understand, John, from you in not very close, probably about the time this comes out.
Yeah, there's a bit of a kerfuffle in what I was allowed to print and what I wasn't allowed to talk about. And as far as, you know, as a owner of Flame, you get access to meetings and so forth about future plans and things like that. And then we have our press hat at FX Guide. So there's a bit of a kerfuffle in what I could publish and what I can't, but that's all straightened out. And it actually provided a little bit of time to provide some background and analysis, I guess you could say, of the reactions to various artists and owners to the news that Autodesk made, which is, you know, basically simplifying their product line, considerably reducing their subscription prices as well as cost prices of Flame and so forth. But we'll have more information about that at Effectsite. Unless you want to talk about that now as well, I guess.
Are we allowed to talk about it now?
Yeah, yes, we're allowed to talk about it now.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple of questions.
Well, what are your questions? Yeah, what are your questions? Because you've seen the press releases, but I'm not, I haven't shared with you actually probably some of the stuff I learned at NAB.
Well, I guess the number one question is, what is the products that they now sell? Like, literally, what's it being reduced to or expanded to? Because it's a little confusing.
Yeah, it is. Well, the products that they sell now or have available are Flame Premium, which is actually, I guess, more specifically a product package of sorts, a bundle, I guess you could say. But as far as individual software products that they're making and releasing, they now have Flame, which is on Linux, Lustre, which is on Linux, Flare, which is on Linux, and then on OS X, they have Flame Assist as well as Smoke. So basically, I guess you could say 6 based products. And yes, oh, by the way, they're still making Backdraft for those of you who use that at your facilities, but that's not being sold anymore.
Okay, so Flame Assist is basically like a kind of a roto pre-prep station.
Flame Assist is basically Smoke with a Flame skin. So, you know, a skin term is just the button, look of the buttons, the look of the UI, the colors. That's what we mean by generally skin. Someone actually wasn't quite clear what that meant. So to be clear, it's Smoke that looks like the Flame buttons in the Flame UI. So
that has all the functionality of Smoke.
Has all the functionality of Smoke. And a tiny bit more. So if Smoke 2015 is being released now, that's coming out actually in a couple weeks, Flame Assist features will be identical to Smoke 2015. However, this is where it starts getting complicated, and this is where the simplicity of the product line will be simple, but there's a bit of a transition period. What's going to happen is that Smoke goes from being treated like some of the other Autodesk products like Flame and so forth. It's going to go to a full-on desktop subscription model beginning in May. That means that you will only be able to subscribe and pay for Smoke, or, you know, for Smoke, it's Smoke on Mac, but only be allowed to pay for Smoke via subscription. And that cost is, in the States, $195 a month, $545 a quarter, or $1,750 a year. And that's, again, the United States only. Prices will vary overseas. So that's
so if I want Smoke, the only way to get it is to pay my annual $1,750 subscription fee, or as you say, like $195 a
month.
Beginning in May. Yes, that's it. Game over. Now, can I walk up to my happy Autodesk representative sales guy and say, hey, I'd like a Flame Assist then, because I just want to buy something?
No, you cannot. The idea behind that is that Flame Assist is targeted to people who have effectively already owned Flames or have Smoke Advance, but they bought Smoke to kind of serve as an assistant workstation.
So if you've got Flame Premium in LA, say, can I have Flame Assist in Sydney?
If you connected to the VPN, yes, because we're part of the same company.
Right, so there's a license callback between the two or something?
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah, as long as we're part of this company. So let me just roll that back a bit because it's important. With Smoke, people who bought Smoke, I kind of take it into 3 groups of users, okay? You have the group of users that are, say, facility owners, you know, like our friends Wally or Tim at Suspect or Andy Milkus. They have a Flame, several Flames maybe, and they needed an affordable kind of assistant prep workstation, someplace that Roto could be done, Conform, things like that. Those places bought Smoke on Mac, right? Because it was a sensible way to have project compatibility and still get a lot of the tool sets that you could work with, all right? So that's one group of people. Second group of people are customers new to Autodesk, the video professional, the indie filmmaker, you know, the people who they released Smoke on Mac to back in 2013, you know, with Smoke 2013. Interestingly enough, that's the largest segment of Smoke 2013 users, with about 75% of those being new customers. So that group makes up the lion's share of the people who actually bought Smoke on Mac, which is a little bit surprising to me. I thought it would be higher and skewed towards the system side, but those video professionals make up 75% of the people who bought Smoke on Mac. And then you have a third group, which are kind of the flame freelancer group. They're flame artists during the day, they freelance and flame, but they looked at this product and go, hey, you know what? It maybe makes sense for me to, you know, drop in and buy that product after, you know, because then I could, you know, work on jobs, I could work on stuff at home if I want to, actually even do my own jobs utilizing a tool set that I know and am familiar with. Maybe even collaborate back at, you know, someone's facility utilizing my Smoke. So, you know, maybe that's a bit simplified, Mike, but those are kind of three groups of people I see as buying Smoke. Two out of those three groups, I think, are taken care of. The third group, that freelancer group, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a freelancer, I'd want Flame Assist, wouldn't I?
Yeah, and the problem is that the only people who can buy Flame Assist, or actually, let me start over. This is incredible. This does seem so complicated, but
I'm glad you understand this.
Okay, yeah. So let's go back to these groups. You bought Smoke on Mac. If you bought Smoke on Mac and you're one of that, you're in that first group. Okay, the people who own a Flame system or Smoke Advanced system or even Smoke HD. If you're one of those people, you can do a cross grade, a free cross grade to Flame Assist at this point in time. Okay. So if you're one of those people in that group, I think you're handled, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're covered. Good to go. No problem. And the reason you need to do that is because Smoke 2015 will be the last release of Smoke that has full project compatibility with Flame. In other words, moving forward, Flame won't be able to read Smoke projects and Smoke won't be able to read Flame projects. Okay. Uh-huh. So that's a critical aspect moving forward, right? If you're an owner who bought, you own Flame or Smoke, you want to be able to do that free cross grade to Flame Assist to maintain future compatibility, right?
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. So go on.
So the second group of people, let's talk about that. Those are the people who are your video professionals. Those people apparently have an affordable way to make the transition to the desktop subscription model. Okay, so I think the understanding is they've already paid at least close to $4,000 for the software, probably $750 for the subscription. So they've already spent close to, you know, $5,000 on the software. There is some affordable path. I don't know what that means at this point, but they can contact the reseller or Autodesk and get them at least an initial more affordable desktop subscription, okay? And for those people, compatibility with Flame isn't a big deal. There are also things that they don't have, like no network licensing, no remote gateway, which doesn't work anyway. So that's really not a big deal for those people, right? I shouldn't say it's not a big deal, but they have a sensible path to transitioning to future software updates and moving forward, okay? The last people, those people who are the Flame artists who thought they were going to have Flame project compatibility and be able to do this workflow, you know, they're a little bit hung out to dry. They don't have any place to go. Autodesk feels that for them that they should be using Flame Assist, but Flame Assist would tie them to a facility. And if you're a freelancer, you're not tied to a facility. You know, you might be able to have access to Flame Assist while you're working that facility, but once that's gone, you don't have anything, right? So that group, I think, is a bit out of luck, to put it nicely.
So I get what you're saying, which is most people have a path forward, and I get what you're saying insofar as they're moving to a subscription model, but the net result of this is if I had to sit an exam right now to explain and draw diagrams that you know could illustrate what is happening, I would fail.
Try writing a story about it.
I mean, quite frankly, I understand why. I understand that they've even got the right intent, that you're not saying that they're being idiots about this, and yet it is a bollocking mess.
It is. You're nothing right. I mean, I was actually, it's funny you said that, because I'm not going to do it, but one of my ideas for the feature page was to do some weird, crazy flow graph of what it all meant. But I think the point is that this is a, what you would call, what, speed bump or bump in the road, that once that transition happens, it's a non-issue. But this bump in the road has come up quite a bit. It's been 2 years since there's been any software update to Smoke, with, frankly, no communication from Autodesk during that time. So they don't have a great track record with it.
Well, not only that, but you don't want to be having speed bumps and making life complicated right when the foundry is releasing a new product.
No, you're now, exactly right.
I mean, the foundry product is really interesting. It's not out available just yet, so it's not like, you know, this second you could go buy it. But nevertheless, I've got to say, one of the things that I found difficult in a facility is trying to get CapEx approval to people that really, quite frankly, eyes would glass over within the first 5 minutes of this discussion. They want to know what we should buy and why it's a good deal and how we're going to make money from it. And it would just be a lot easier for everybody concerned if they didn't have such a convoluted pricing and business model. And I really think people underestimate how beneficial it is to sales to have a simple, easy to understand elevator pitch in anything. I mean, anything. Like if you're trying to pitch any part of this business, you need to be able to get it down to, hey, you want this, you want that. I think that Autodesk will probably get out the other side and it'll be a lot simpler. But for the next whatever, this is just an awkward sort of pain in the butt to anyone that's
they should have even reduced it even more simply that when you get a flame, or just call it flame premium, get rid of the distinction between flame premium and flame, you know? So what flame means is you have this flame software, Luster, and these workstations, Flare and Flame Assist. I don't necessarily mind those two different workstations. They're different tools, but at least it's complex. So at the high end, you buy into Flame, this is what you get. And at the other end, you have Smoke, and this is what you get. I just think that would be so much easier.
Anybody else, you can have all this stuff behind the scenes. You say, look, if you've got a problem, come see us. We'll sort you out. We'll look after you.
Because behind the scenes, what's getting lost in this, and because it's so complex, is that there are some positive things. Now, Flame is not for everyone, and we may still question the business model and whether this idea of Flame and the Hero Suite is going away, but they've made some significant changes. I mean, price on subscription is 30 to 40% lower, as is the cost. And talking to facility owners, not artists, and talking to facility owners, they're really positive about that. At NAB, it was a very positive vibe from those people, right? I mean, because they're just going, okay, you know what? I think I'm going to pay the money for subscription to get current again. We talked to a lot of people who said that. For people who own Smoke Advanced or Smoke HD or Flint or Inferno, you know what? They're getting a free cross grade to Flame. They're getting the full Flame tool set at no additional charge, right? They just get it with the 2015 release. They had a Flint the day before. They've got a Flame now. So there are some very positive stories, Mike, in this whole thing regarding their customers, but it's getting lost in the kerfuffle and the confusion with the complexity of this upgrade matrix.
So can you tell me what the three most interesting things in 2015 are?
Yes, most interesting things. You'll get a laugh out of this one. But the first one is frankly a much better workflow in the UI. They've really smoothed out quite a few of the bumps in the desktop. You know, you can make images that are larger than little tiny thumbnails in the media view. You've got drag and dropping between library structure. I mean, it was basically, I'll be honest, it's a return to many things that we liked about the original Flame have now been implemented in Flame 2015. Okay, so maybe that's not a new feature, but a return of an old feature. But it's an important one, honestly, and it's something that people had complaints about, and now it's back and it's there. But as far as creative features, I really like the 3D shape and replica tools. Basically, 3D shape allows you to take a G mask and extrude it and turn it into a 3D object. It's not just fully extrusion. You have scale functionality in the profile. You also have rotation functionalities in the profile. So that's interesting. You can actually use this tool to create really quick geometry in a scene for, say, camera projections or relighting and things like that. So in addition to motion graphics, you can actually use it for compositing and other techniques. You also finally have SVG import. So in other words, we can effectively import EPS files as vector art in Flame now. I pointed out after almost two decades of wishing for it. So that's an interesting one. And then there's, I think the next one, Matchbox, improvements to the Matchbox shader UI, where there's some really cool development being done in these OpenGL, GLSL shaders that are really fast inside Flame, basically utilizing the GPU for the computational power.
You might want to explain to people that aren't Flame users what Matchbox is.
Yeah, okay. So what Matchbox is it's a basically it's a node or a tool that allows users to program GLSL shaders, or that's redundant, but program shaders in Flame that effectively run on the GPU. They can be run as nodes within the batch flow graph, which is similar to Nuke's graph, or they can also be in Flame applied on the timeline as an effect on the timeline. And what that means is they're very fast processing tools, and people have done things that create just cool generational type things, such as creating star fields or dust fields or things like that. But it can also be used for applying LUTs, color grading, things like that. Basically, anything that you can create in a GLSL shader, you can actually turn it into a Matchbox shader within Flame. It's not quite a plugin, but it does have similar, it does have parallels to plugin. You know, users can create a UI where you enter values and sliders and inputs and things like that to create these tools.
But the creating of a Matchbox node is something that probably isn't going to be done by a sort of a less technical creative artist.
Exactly. Yeah, but there's a, yes, that's true. And they've even, they've actually created a user repository. I'll post in the forums about it. But they've created a user repository of these shaders that you can download and install. In addition to that, they've actually added in this release ability to have more controls within the shaders and also encrypt your shaders. And this will actually open up a market to develop more complex shaders that you could actually market and sell. So maybe kind of fill a gap in the dearth of people who are actually programming Sparks for Flame.
Yeah, so that website link is logic, logik-matchbook.org.
Thanks, Mike.
And you'll see there are icons there showing the sort of stuff that John's talking about, like fireballs or fractal cell stuff, which I think is really nice. But also just image processing stuff that is the kind of stuff. And that will grow. And that idea of the community sharing stuff, I think, is really, really vital to any product.
Yeah, it is. And to have that kind of, you know, an architecture to do this is points out that there's a real need for and desire for that within the Flame community, actually.
You could actually argue that what happened is in the early days, we, of course, had plugins to Flame, and they were the big plugin market. Like, that was where it was at. And then it got to a point that the Flame market wasn't big enough. So you saw a lot of those plugin companies either implode, merge, or sort of focus on other things that were like Premiere plugins or, you know, whatever. And that made sense because the Flame market wasn't big enough. And there were, and in the early days, you would just buy a bunch of plugins for your Flame. But as prices became more competitive, you know, dropping an extra couple of grand or maybe even $5,000 on plugins on a Flame that cost, you know, $750,000 was nothing, but dropping of $3,000 on a Flame that is a lot cheaper became a big deal. And yet without the kind of money that would generate for the plugin companies, they couldn't really afford to be generating stuff just for Flame. And then, of course, Foundry was one of those companies, so they sort of were less focused on Flame, and so it went. So this is actually, in a sense, a way to get back some of those cool things that were you know, great in the earlier days of Flame.
Yeah, it is. That's very true. And, you know, nice aspect of that. And then also in the performance realm, they've done an interesting thing that they now support a second GPU within Flame. And if you've seen the FXGuyTV apps, I've talked with Philippe Soero about this in the past. But with this initial release, you can add a second case 6000 card if you're on the 800, or a K6000 card if you're on the 820, and actually do what's similar to Burn. They call it Background Reactor, but you can actually send rendering to your second GPU while continuing to work in the foreground on another scene or another shot. And in the testing we've done, it's actually very close in speed to, if not identical, to the speed of foreground processing. So you're not really not missing anything or losing anything by sending that off to the background automatically. In fact, and sometimes it's faster than foreground processing, but I imagine that's a bug in this first release for some reason. But And that's just the first step. You know, Philippe, we've talked with Philippe about other ways, but I hope it's just the first step of things like, you know, automatic background rendering of stuff that's later in your timeline, getting that all done without you having to worry about it, or even super processing, right? They, where you could have one scene that gets distributed to both GPUs, so it processes in double the time. And this actually becomes quite critical with the new support, full support for 4K workflow. Within Flame for, via monitoring, playback of up to, I believe it's 50p with the new, you know, obviously with new hard drives and new storage chassis attached. But I remember the early days of HD when your processing times start rendering up. We used Burn a ton back in the early days. And again, as we move to 4K, processing times are going to be higher. So I think that kind of thing actually is going to be more and more needed as people start to do, presumably, more 4K work.
And by the way, if you're looking at Matchbook and you're recording a podcast, don't click on any buttons because music starts playing automatically. yes. So we should discuss the Foundry because that's obviously a big, big interest. And this isn't this week in Flame. And I just guess I was wondering what your take was on the product and in particular, you know, that sort of comparison to Flame, because that's obviously the buzz that people are saying is that a Hero Nuke combined with a GPU interface and a timeline and everything else is aimed squarely at a Flame market.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely aimed at that. I mean, it's going to take some time in reality for that to get there, as you know. I think this announcement, while is certainly a big announcement, something that's been looked forward to by the community for a long time, I don't think it's incredibly surprising if you look at it. I mean, I think when you saw them come out with, in fact, Storm, when Storm was first released, you saw the beginnings of, oh, the Foundry has a timeline-based software application. I just imagine they could hook that up with their shot-based system, and then Hero comes out, and that's even clearer. But I, sitting through, I'm not speaking of the Nuke promo, but I'm speaking of the actual live launch event.
Yep.
It was about an hour long that was on Monday. I don't know, like you, I sat through that nodding my head and going, oh, that's interesting, and that's a useful feature, and they've obviously thought about this. I think they ticked a lot of boxes in, you know, taking that, you know, shot-based paradigm into a timeline with a lot of really interesting potential workflows.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say is that for a start, it was a video, that live event, which is kind of a weird thing, huh? You go to a video, a live event, so that they can play your video.
But I thought that was actually really smart because instead of a demo that you kind of fumble through, I thought for this purpose, okay, I mean, yeah, I think for this
purpose. You've got to admit, there's a bit of irony though in that.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah. Well, okay, no. So we were helping them with the production on that. And at one point, we weren't clear as like, do we want to make it clear this is video playing back? Is Jeff's directing? Do you want to make it clear that it's not the UI demo going on? But it was obviously clear from watching that it wasn't John actually operating the machine.
Well, especially when it got to the sped up Nuke stuff.
Yeah, right. So when we were having, we literally, Jeff and I talked about that as it was going on, you know, we didn't have that discussion. It was intended to seem that way. They weren't trying to hide anything, of course, but that thought did cross our mind.
No,
anyway,
I just think
I'm sorry
funny.
For interrupting.
People do that all the time, right? You go to a webinar and you turn up the webinar and it's somebody playing a video and it's like, well, okay. Anyway, so the only thing I'd say is I think it's really interesting. I think one of the things that you sort of have to think about is what you can do on that timeline. Because when I first saw it, I thought, oh, okay, so that's going to be just like my Premiere timeline. You know, and I could just composite on the timeline effectively. And I was like, well, no, you can't. What do you mean you can't? So there's, once you inherit a paradigm that is very familiar to people, so Premiere, you know, that timeline is, I mean, I could say Avid, but you know what I mean? I could say Final Cut, but it's the same kind of basically look and feel thing. You kind of just drag all your baggage of what you assume that you can do on that along with you. So I think that there will be either A, need to add that, or B, people going, what do you mean I can't do this? This is exactly the sort of thing that you do on timelines. Well, yeah, but not our timeline. So as powerful as it is, I take nothing away from that. And we've obviously covered it well on FX Guide, just on this show, on this DoD podcast. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just sort of speaking it a bit more in depth, that once you get past the how great it is And if you accept that I do think it's great, there are going to be some aspects that I think I'd be reaching for, like buttons I'd be going for that aren't... I mean, I love some things, you know, like being able to link and clone a color correction mm-hmm. and then add other color corrections on top. Awesome stuff. All I'm saying is there would be other things that I'd be immediately thinking, well, I'll just do that here. And, well, actually, you have to go into a new thing to do that. Oh, okay. It is not Final Cut or Premiere.
No, it's not. And, you know, it's gonna. That's why I think, again, people are excited about the promise of it. You know, this is a new thing. And, again, not unexpected, but, you know, the game is on, as they say. And Flame has seen quite a few over the years, competitors and trying to do this. And Flame is still around. They're not like, you know, things like Socrato might be one that Cyborg. Is that Cyborg?
Yep.
Was that right? But
yep. 5D.
I think the foundry of any software company that can do it, the foundry is one that certainly can. But it's not an easy task, is it? I think if it was an easy, we'd see something out there already. But certainly they're laying the right foundation, I think, to be in the future, a serious competitor.
Which brings the question of price. Now, all I've been able to find out so far is if I spend the 9,000-ish US to buy the production bundle or whatever it is of the Foundry.
The Creative Collective, right?
Well, no, you be careful. It's not the, it's the production.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Production Collective. Yes,
not the correct. Creative Collective.
Not the Creative, right.
Yeah, could somebody just have simple names? Like, really, seriously, dude. Everything's like non, yeah. Anyway, so if I buy that, which is $9,600, I'm going to get effectively four pieces of software, which is great. And then I would get this automatically when it comes along. Whereas at the moment, I know of no other actual sort of specific pricing thing that gets me there. Do you?
I don't. And I could say that's because they have some time to ponder that. I don't know. But my guess is it's going to be at least that, because if you take a look at, you know, it's a combination of Nuke and Hero, right? In essence, plus more, maybe. We don't even know what's going to happen to Hero, really, as much long term. But I guess the best we can say is just what you said, Mike. I think it's, you're going to be around just under the 10K mark for purchasing that.
But I mean, that 10K would give me Moto, Mari.
Mari as well.
And of course, presumably, I still get to keep my Nuke X and Hero that I get as part of that package. I don't know that it replaces my Hero and Nuke X. So, yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. The Creative collection is the one that just has Moto, Mari, and the Hero player in it. So I guess you could see the Production Collective ending up as Moto, Mari, and then Nuke Studio. I don't know. I just don't know. But, I mean, at $9,000, I mean, Mari is a very valuable piece of software in its own mm-hmm. right, you know. Yeah. Not like Moto isn't a valuable piece of software. So, but there will be people that just want to buy Nuke Studio and don't want to buy that package. They just literally have no use for Mari. You're like, I'm sorry, my pipeline doesn't use it. Why do I need to buy that?
Yeah, I can certainly say that. So we'll see what they do moving forward.
The other thing that is worth noting is this is really a DNA thing, I guess. But as was shown in the question time at the live event, God, it sounds like I'm being down on this product, and I'm so not. I'm so not being down. I'm just, what I'm trying to do is go beyond the kind of initial press release. So, you know, if we'd spoken on the day, I'd have had a different discussion. But I'm now pondering those things that are a bit different. But in the question time, there was a question about field-based rendering and stuff. And of course, Flame came from an era of videotape. So machine control, everything to do with video and interlace and all of that 3-2 pull-down stuff was just stuff that Flame had to solve when that was the only thing you had to do. You mm-hmm. had to solve that stuff. Nuke right. comes from an era of 24 frames a second, frame-based film type sort of DNA from, of course, Digital Domain in the first instance. And so it's not as if, you know, intrinsic in Nuke's DNA is handling fields and stuff. Of course it has lots of stuff for handling that stuff. But you know, when that question was like, we need field-based rendering, there was just like, John was like, yep, no. And I understand why. I'm just saying mm-hmm. like, as they move to especially markets outside the US, and if they want it to be a finishing tool, though, you know, it is being pitched a bit as a supervisor tool, but if it was being used as a finishing tool, you'd have to address some of that stuff.
Yeah. Do you think they can, yeah, can they afford to wait the 2 years so we don't have to worry about interlacing anymore?
When you say the 2 years, I don't think in 2 years there'll be no need for interlacing anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
I totally get that it's not a priority in some respects, but that's the legacy aspect of video, right? At the TV station level.
Right.
You know, a lot of that stuff, like the audio editing tools, you know, you need stronger audio editing when you're coming from that background as a finishing suite. So at the moment, it's a terrific supervisor station. It's a terrific station full stop, but I'm just, you know, trying to, as in the same way that I was just trying to be critical of Flame's incredibly complicated pricing system, I'm not, you know, I'm just trying to sort of flag that as a, yeah, let's think about this for a second. It is awesome, but it's going to have some issues. It's not the, nothing is, I guess, you know, the silver bullet to every problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. But again, I think it's just a sensible discussion about this, as well as, you know, the Autodesk news. You know, it sound like I'm crabbing about the Autodesk stuff, but I mean, I think they're making some positive changes and they're listening, but it's getting lost in the cloud. Similar to what you were saying about the realities of the Nuke Studio.
I think Nuke Studio is going to be immensely popular and
I agree.
Will succeed. I have no question that it'll succeed. I also think that the Foundry did a good job in launching it. Like, it was a clear message, and it wasn't just we're showing Hero and Nuke and we're thinking about the possibility of connecting the two. Like, they'd obviously done significant amounts of work, and there was GPU stuff and a lot of really good stuff in terms of farm rendering and stuff that just wasn't, well, we haven't really thought about this, but I guess we'll do something.
You know what it wasn't also? It wasn't a discussion of, this is what we're saying this product is. These are our talking points about the product, and this is what you're going to go talk about. You know what they did is they actually showed, I thought that project was kind of a great example, test case of working through it. And that's where I said at the beginning, I saw it work through it going, I'm going, yeah, okay, that solves that. Oh, that solves that thing that we run into.
The only thing, John, was they were basically showing you a TVC finishing product. And I feel like if I had to pick one user to give this to right now, it would be a supervisor rather than a guy who's doing TVC finishing. Like, it's a subtle distinction, but right out of the gate, the first people that'll love this to death are supervisors that want to tweak some stuff, open up somebody else's script. Somebody else has done a lot of the work and they just want to, you know, do some looking at what would happen if I did this or did that, and hand it back to somebody, and be able to, you know, compare the edits and see how it's flowing, and start worrying about how, whether shots are consistent and whether it's flowing in a cut and all that kind of stuff. Though the example, while terrific, I mean, I totally agree with you. It was awesome, terrific demo. It was a TVC finishing example. And would that not be a better market for them, maybe at version 1.5 or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but it was clear the reason they used that, right, is because they're pointing out where they're going, I think.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's why I think that's why they did that, right?
And you know, it looked great. I mean, it was a good demo, yeah.
So maybe from that standpoint, they were telling you where they were going with it. But yeah, I agree. I mean, it's going to be...
But if you sit in a suite doing 15 versions, if you're doing multiple versions and multiple outputs and lots of, you know, stuff, I don't know. It's just... it's subtle. It's very, very subtle point I'm making, but I think you're right that what they're flagging is what they're heading at. And, you know, quite frankly, it's a sensible move for them, because I don't know, there's a huge market for, you know, quadrupling the amount of Nuke and feature films. It seems everywhere already, but in TVC and that kind of work, there's got to be a lot of room to grow.
Yeah.
Do you think After Effects is, because it's not compared to After Effects. Do you think there's anything to be said there in relationship to After Effects? Because After Effects, in a sense, sort of tries to do this with Premiere and get sort of a closer working loop. I mean, if...
What I feel about this is I think it legitimizes this thing that we have known in the past and currently even from, I shouldn't just put all in the past, but of an integrated tool set within a single application. And why... Flame artists love Flame, or a large part of the reason Flame artists love Flame is because you're working in the same box with many of the same paradigms. You see that now with Nuke Studio, where they're actually working internally at the Foundry to try and have more consistency across their products in the way things work. so that you're not switching gears when you go from one application to another. And with the Adobe product still, I feel like you are very much working in separate applications when you're working within After Effects, mm-hmm. working within Premiere, and especially working within SpeedGrade, right? You know, the skin's the same. Some things are getting closer and closer, the tool set and things you can do. But that's where, for me, it breaks down a little bit within the Adobe workflow, not to mention some of the limitations in Dynamic Link in Adobe, where you're only utilizing one CPU for render. You're not able to do multiple instances of rendering when things are Dynamic Link. So you have a performance cut. You know, in Nuke Studio, they've done a lot of work under the hood to improve efficiency of concurrent reads and other things. So I don't know. It's
Let's the parallels it, are there. If we turn up at NAB next year and there was a combined Premiere After Effects product, we'd also think it was a good idea.
Yeah.
But we're not thinking, I'm certainly not thinking that.
No.
What?
No. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, it would work, right? I mean, like the logic is valid in a different context. If what the Foundry's done is logic that if you applied it to, notwithstanding pricing and all the other crap, but if you applied that same logic to Adobe, you'd come out with a product I'd want to look at.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? I'm going over to FMX in Germany, and I'm trying. I haven't talked to you about this, Mike, but if you think it's a good idea, I'm trying to see if it makes sense to just stop by London on the way and get some more details about Nuke Studio and some of the tech behind it on the way back to the States. Might be interesting to do that.
Well, good point. Let's discuss that offline. Hey, I've got to go because I've got something in my eye. Sorry. It's really okay, weird. I'm sitting here and I'm like, one eye is kind of half shut. I really need to go splash cold water in my eye. I think an eyelash is in my eye. Anyway, I'm sitting here in quite a lot of pain, so I'm going to have to sign off, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
but,
no worries.
It's been good talking to you.
I'm still in a bit of stomach pain myself, so probably a good idea.
No, mine's a very temporary problem. Mine will be solved about the second I get a splash of water, but I'm just literally weeping out of one eye. But guys, thanks so much for listening, and obviously we'll be back next week, and I've had a good week one. We haven't spoken a lot about what's inside PhD this week, but I think this news is so interesting and so important that it deserves some analysis. Thank you, John.
Thank you, and good to be back at home. Talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.